Listen to that all day. That's Hank Crawford on alto sax, teaming up with Jimmy McGriff on organ for River's Invitation. It happens to be one of my favorite tunes, and I especially like it because it was the first album I actually bought when I was in college and really, really hurting for money. But I bought it with great pain, and then I lent it to a friend. Needless to say, it just went and vanished in the ether, never to be seen again. So I especially like that. And to the person who absconded with my album, it was Joyride. On which River's Invitation appeared. May you ever cry bitter tears for doing a thing like that to me. Others on this album included Jimmy Ponder on guitar, Billy Preston on piano, and Vance James on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we have a lot of analysis coming your way today. It might have occurred to you that we haven't talked about the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation in a while because we have been concerned with the insane things going on around the presidency, around Congress, around measures that they are hoping still to enact to make life just that much more miserable for all of us. But in the middle of all of that, we didn't get very much news about what's going on with the subject that we've been covering for quite some time, and that is the Clinton Foundation, and more specifically, Hill and Bill. Bill and Hillary Clinton are on edge, waiting for the proverbial axe to fall. And it surely will, says our very good friend, expert, financial expert and former banker, Charles Ortel, who has been paying close attention to the political and economic landscape for the unusual moves by the Clintons. That, too, just like what's going on with the Republicans seeking to dismantle every possible social program in secret. They, too, have been trying to scramble whatever is left of their so-called reputation, rebuild it real fast, plug up the holes they know exist, because they know some heavy action is coming. And they have been doing this in secret, of course. But there is no secrecy where Charles Ortel is concerned. He has been working crazy hours in trying to connect these dots, and he's getting somewhere. He's with us today to give us an update. Hello, Charles. How are you doing?
Great, Yatrice. Thanks for having me back on.
Oh, no question. It's a wonderful thing that you afford us this inside knowledge. And I just want to point out to the audience the kinds of things we have been discussing here are starkly absent from the mainstream media. And we have the great privilege of basically benefiting from your knowledge and your work. So I thank you and I welcome you. Well, let's start with the obvious question. What have the Clintons been up to while we took a little break?
Well, I guess they went to the woods. And they've been in the excuse manufacturing business, coming up with excuse after excuse for why Hillary couldn't win a rigged election.
It's everybody else's fault, as you know. She had nothing to do with it. She was 100% a victim of evil people who caused her to lose the election. I wonder what's new as the newest of her examples, you know, her explanations for why she lost.
And as the audience knows, I probably confirm it every time I come on your show, I'm not a political expert, but I do, like all Americans, have an interest in watching it. And it's just a very strange thing. You know, when politicians hold office, any good thing that happens, it's all about them. Any bad thing, it's always the opponent. So here you lose an election. I mean, she didn't just lose. You know, she got dressed up in her swankest swimsuit, went to the top of the tallest diving board, and announced to the world she was going to do a magnificent 10.0 version of a quadruple somersault backflip. And instead, she went through, you know, she dove into an empty pool. I mean, it's a stunning reversal. And to hear, as you rightly point out, excuse after excuse, let's do a redo, maybe he won't get sworn in, it's all about the Russians, now it's about the Germans, it's all about, you know, a bias against women, and, you know, so how does that explain Karen Handel's victory over the fellow down there in Georgia? I mean, it is possible for women to win elections. I mean, this Republican woman did it against John Ossoff. You know, so it does come across as really sour grapes, as being a sore loser. And I also think, you know, I actually warned about this during the election. I think there's a very serious risk here that the Clintons will irrevocably damage, and their loyalists, the Democrat brand. And I say this not as somebody, I don't really like either parties, but I can admit on your show that in our family in recent time, we have had two Democrats. One, in, you know, chuckle, in 1846 to 1849, served as the Democrat mayor in Springfield, Illinois, and another ran for Congress as a Democrat in Montana two or three times in 1904 timeframe. And, you know, I bear no animus against the Democratic Party. I wish there were a true deep dive into the issues that still, perhaps even more so, plague this country. I mean, it's useful to have at least two probing points of view to see the Democratic Party follow the Clinton team literally into the woods. I think we run a risk here that the Democrat brand gets, you know, irrevocably soiled by this deplorable behavior, frankly.
Well, they think it's winning. They think it's a winning formula. They think we're crazy. But they're denying the evidence before them that the party is shot to hell and that the Clintons, I mean, they have to be made accountable for they sucked up all of the oxygen in the party. They sucked up all the resources of the party. And they've done so with the benefit of confidence of the party, even as they did incredible wrongs, and people just covered up for them. They did everything possible to make the Clinton way of doing things basically come about. And the way of doing things also included incredible amounts of criminal activity that became normal. They have nobody to blame for themselves, and I'm talking about the party as a whole. The party allowed itself to be plundered. The party sank to levels we haven't seen before in irregularities that the Clintons were basically committing and brazenly committing, making the party and the foundation and everything else that they did almost like a criminal enterprise. And this seemed to be okay by the Democrats themselves. I don't recall such widespread criminal behavior in a party in recent years. I mean, I haven't seen it being so blatantly displayed with the expectation that nothing is going to happen to them.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would say that it is more than a little bit ironic that Hillary and Bill, who, you know, were basically flower power people, came to prominence in the late 60s with that whole crew, who went around in the late 60s and early 70s saying, don't trust anyone over 30. And in their recent political career, they have certainly proven that point, which I find more than a bit ironic. I mean, here are people in their 70s now. The leading lights, and I've got nothing against people in their 70s and 80s, even 90s, but come on, do the Democrats have no rising stars? Pick somebody, say, 45, 50, you know, nobody with a different point of view here? I mean, do we really want to rely on a whole bunch of people?
You're ignoring the bright star named Chelsea Clinton.
Excuse me?
You're ignoring the bright star, Chelsea Clinton.
And my response is the same. Excuse me? I mean, the person who interviewed the Geico Gecko? I mean, that was a tough interview to get that one.
Oh, my God.
Is that who you're talking to?
This is so pathetic. It's actually very terrifying. I'm sounding like, you know, I'm joking, but I am so terrified about where we are, where there seems to be nothing on the horizon that could redeem the idea of politics generally, and more specifically, that could set a very different example to people about what politics can do, the role of politics in improving conditions of life, and giving people the opportunity to participate in guiding not just a party, but the nation towards some kind of sanity in the way we supposedly should be doing business. It's useless to try because everybody has that mindset. It's about money. And money has come to be a participant, an obligation. You have to make money because that's really what it is. Power is money now, and money is power. What's going on with the Clinton Foundation? We were asked the last time you were on, you know, where did these discoveries end up? The work that you have been doing and others have been doing to get to the heart of what the Clinton Foundation was all about and still is all about, and with the evidence that this was a scam operating at a high level and with equally high levels of protection, why has the Clinton Foundation so successfully fended off any kind of criminal investigation so far?
Well, I believe the year, I may have this year wrong, but I think it was 1453 when invading armies who happened to be of the Islamic faith surrounded modern Istanbul and put the residents, the Christian residents of Istanbul, on the then called Constantinople, on notice that they better surrender or they would die. And it took months and months and months and months, and we know the result. They were all crucified, and it fell under, the city fell. This is a similar situation. I mean, obviously, it's not a war, and it's not doesn't involve violence. But this is a team that long ago decided to use a charity illegally as a criminal enterprise for the furtherance of their political power and to raise money for themselves and for cronies. And they've been doing this ever since October 23rd, 1997. When you go down a track like this, you have to play for keeps. You have to assume that you will retain control. And at the time they started this, you know, he was fighting off. He successfully was not, he was acquitted in his impeachment trial. He was impeached, but he wasn't convicted. He, as a guest, they fully expected that Al Gore would win in 2000. And when he lost, they inserted Lois Lerner into the IRS. They still had followers in, you know, the various bureaucracies. They were able to put still more in on one Obama won. And they thought she was going to win. And what we learned through this process is that prosecutors in at state and federal level, and to the extent they operate internationally against U.S. interests, all have discretion. And they award too much deference to powerful politicians. And so, you know, there's a reluctance to go after these types. There's a long history with the Clintons. As you point out, Chelsea may someday run for office. They certainly have displayed in the past a vindictive streak against their enemies. And so, you know, it takes a certain determined assault. I wouldn't have been interested in doing this had this been a narrow political matter. But because they used a charity, they evidently, you know, I've been told by asked people who know of them, you know, how could they get this so badly wrong? And the answer that comes back is they don't listen to anybody. You know, they've been successful for so long at doing this, getting through scandals. You know, the guy was the former president of the United States. He was popular even through his messing around in the period when he was president, very popular. And he has many loyalists even to this day. So they thought they could just gut it out and get through it. But the facts are that when you operate this type of a charity, this is not – they have actually two Clinton charities, two main ones. One is called the – Clinton Family Foundation. That's what's called a private foundation. You don't solicit from the public there. You just put your own money in, typically. And sometimes you will accept unsolicited donations, but in the main, it's your own money. That's not what this presidential foundation is. This is what's called a public charity. It sits, its trustees are supposed to be independent. They can't be family members, all family members. They can't get involved in politics. They can't include only their political followers. And they actually have to, when they register, the rules are super, super strict. Sometimes the most surprising states, you know, that are smaller states have the toughest rules. Why? Because, you know, it's ingrained in our tradition, in our history, that charities are to be used, public charities are to be used exclusively to serve a public interest, not for private gain. And the laws are, I keep stressing, are really strict. So when you get on your motorcycle and you motor down into Alabama and you start holding yourself out as raising money for the Clinton Foundation, you better make sure in Alabama that you register in advance. And you better make sure that if you do solicit more than the minimum sum, that sum actually goes to the authorized purpose and not to any other purpose. And why? Because in the state of Alabama, trivial amounts of larceny, of diversion, land you in state prison for a long time, each count. And these sort of thicket of state laws, and even in some cities there are laws, you have to make a truthful declaration concerning the status when you initially register, and many of these other states and key states where there's a lot of money and so a lot of soliciting, like New York and California, have requirements that if you register and there's a change in the information in the registration statement that's material. You have to update the state and the public concerning that change. And the Clinton Foundation, you know, because they believe they're above the law, evidently, their first step is to put press people into contact with journalists and others who are clueless, who have no knowledge concerning the actual rules. You see this, in fact, in the way in the firm that they have hired to deal with registrations. That firm is a bucket shop, small operation based in I think rural Virginia, or in a suburb of Washington D.C. in Virginia, where on the letterhead, and all their communications are public. It's a public charity, so the public needs to be informed. This interaction back and forth, you can see it in California, in the state of California. You can see it in New York. It's the same firm. And when you look at the letterhead of the firm explicitly states that they're not qualified to provide legal advice in the states in which they're trying to help the Clinton Foundation. So what good is that? They don't know New York law. They don't know California law. But they get some firm to, you know, send forms along and, you know, and they think that's going to get them out of trouble. Well, it doesn't get you out of trouble. In fact, it's the reverse. You know, when the meter actually finally drops here, when Eric Schneiderman or Xavier Becerra out there in California, or, you know,
these
Leslie
are,
Rutledge.
These
in,
are
you know,
attorneys general.
Right. When they finally see, when they finally see, and when the political calculus begins to shift in the Democratic Party, and some young person in their 40s or 50s decides that, you know, these Clintons are killing us here politically. They're killing the party. And they see, you know, the political benefit of taking on the Clintons in a way that defends the interests and the integrity of a vital portion of the American. What makes this country special, I would argue, in part, is our generous spirit. Yes, there are mean people, but the overwhelming majority of Americans, you know, are generous by heart. And you see it in the numbers that are available for all of us. You see just how much money we give more away as a group. And it's not the rich who give the most away. The large, many millions of us, tens of millions of us, give several hundred billion dollars a year away to charity. That's a lot of money. And we do it to try to help. We don't do it to line the pockets of a bunch of slime buckets from the state of Arkansas, you know, who don't know the difference between right and wrong, and who have moved into my home state here in New York, and where the state where I was born. They've been abusing California as well, you know, and they are besmirching, I hope not irreparably, the great names of countless volunteers who do this great work around the country and around the world by going around as the former president of the United States and somebody aspiring to be president, who knows what Chelsea wants to be if she ever gets a real job, you know, they're besmirching the names of all the people who represent themselves around the world as operating charities by operating in this fashion, which sets the standard for deviancy in operating. This will be, I hope, set in stone as an example of what you do not do when you operate a charity. This is the polar opposite of complying with the law is how they have run this charity and how they run it every day. And the problem for them, I warned them in writing numerous times. I said, you better stop soliciting. And they obviously listened closely to me because yesterday there was an announcement that charity, noted famed charity expert Barbara Streisand, was hardly a charity expert because she gave money to the Clinton Foundation to fight climate change when it was not authorized for that purpose back in around 2006. She is out raising money now for the Clinton Foundation. It's very dangerous because, you know, she is a rich person who will be sued eventually as a guest.
Well, let's take a look at the last couple of weeks, or let's say last couple of months. Now, Hillary, of course, after her defeat or after others caused her defeat, she disappeared for a while and was walking the dogs in the woods and looking really awful as a sign that, you know, she took her loss that other people caused her very, very hard. And then after a little rest, she presented herself to the public as the originator of a new, well, it is a foundation. This supposed political action committee is a foundation, Onward Together. And she said it's going to be devoted to combating the conservative agenda with a progressive resistance. Now, I don't know. It seems that a lot of people bought the idea that Hillary is now a leader for resistance. Everybody is resisting, including people who should themselves be resisted. They have the money and the wherewithal to stage their own unrealities and make them look genuine and fair. So she's launched this political action committee, Onward Together, and she's made a couple of speeches across the country about this new effort that she's involved in, even though she had sworn off politics. She was done with it, wants nothing to do with it. Now here she is, as political as ever. Question one. How is it possible that Hillary Clinton escaped the watchful eyes of the IRS in formulating and in founding this political action committee operating as a foundation? How could the IRS legitimately allow the mixing of the two? And number two, is this not a clear indication that in the standard way that the Clintons operate, Clinton is fully now involved in recreating a Clinton Foundation in anticipating that something is going to happen to the old Clinton Foundation, and she has to have something in place, and Bill has to have something in place, because so much money is available under the guise of foundation work?
Well, let me see if I can get all that question and answer all that question. But I think in the first instance, the reason that a new foundation may be authorized by the IRS is that the same person who was nearly impeached by Congress for his, frankly, deplorable behavior as head of the IRS, John Koskinen, is still head of the IRS. And the same person that Marsha Blackburn, the, I think, fantastic congressperson in representing the area of Nashville, Tennessee, she landed on the Clinton Foundation about a year ago and sent a letter, a formal letter, to the head of the IRS, you know, demanding an investigation. She got a form response, a form letter response, you know, dear person, you know, from the acting head of the tax-exempt department, who's still the acting head of the tax-exempt department. So the short answer to the question is that the bureaucracy at the IRS has not yet, as far as I know, been touched by the incoming Trump administration. Now, I don't know why you would wait as long as they've been waiting to have hearings. I think there should be congressional House and Senate hearings on how and on whether or not the IRS has been corrupted by partisan operatives in the Uniparty, both parties. You know, has the IRS been used? I would go all the way back to, you know, frankly, I'd go back to 1992 or 1988, but, you know, I don't know how Congress works, how far back you can go. I think it's a fair question. You know, how has the IRS been used by either party or both parties to create supposed charities that, in fact, are nothing more than slush funds that can be used to bypass the strict rules against having foreign governments meddle in our elections? And here I'm, you know, we could talk about Russia. We could talk about Germany today's in the news, supposedly was spying on us. You know, various government interests, Middle Eastern, are well known for trying to curry favor with politicians in both parties. I think the American public has a right to know exactly how these foundations, there's some great reporting coming out now by our friend Richard Pollack and his colleague Mark Tapscott at the Daily Caller on the McCain Institute. You know, I was quoted in one piece recently. I don't like it when politicians in either party curry favor with influence peddlers. known influence peddlers, people like George Soros. I don't like to see that. And, you know, that's not what charity should be about. Charity is about selfless giving to truly address needs that government is not addressing effectively enough. That's what a charity should be about. It's not about, you know, helping a politician out with a change in that politician's lifestyle or using a charity to fund expenses that don't have to be paid by a campaign. That is not what this is supposed to be about. So the short answer is that, you know, Hillary and her various fixers and backers see potential merit in still having her on this scene. But I was reminded by a friend this morning of I'll slaughter the name of the singer. I think it's something like Dierks Bentley, B-E-N-T-L-E-Y, has a great country western video and song where the lyrics are, "What Was I Thinking?" And it's really, even if you don't like country music, it's very funny. And that's got to be what the Democrats should be listening to right now. What was I thinking allowing the Clintons, who it now seems in hindsight, I mean, to steal the nomination from Bernie and then attempt to rig the general election? What were they thinking? And why would you believe? Why would you believe that this person who has now definitively lost twice is a smart person to back 4 years from now, 3 years from now, I guess, with the odds of being a three-time loser? Why would anybody believe those odds make sense? I don't get it.
Well, I think I got a good part of it, because it again follows the axiom of money is power and power is money. The will of the people be damned. It is what a few people want to do. How do you explain, for example, that all this time it wasn't just the political protection that they got, but we had the head of the FBI basically providing ironclad coverage? He knew that they were involved in massive criminal activity. He knew it. He knew that Loretta Lynch met with Bill Clinton in a manner that any half-baked lawyer would see as compromising the integrity of the agency and the process. They have conflated the idea of philanthropy with the nastiest, lowest grade form of, quote, politics there is. Because, in fact, and I'm going to ask you the question plainly, were these philanthropic enterprises from the beginning organized crime?
Well, if I wasn't on the Christmas card list of the Clinton family before, I'm certainly not going to be on it now. from the very beginning, you know, there are criminal statutes. I'm not a lawyer, I should hasten to point out, but I'm told by lawyers, and I satisfied myself, that there's a criminal statute called the Racketeering Corrupt, RICO statute, whatever it is.
Racketeering Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act.
Right. All right. So there you go. The law firm of Lead and Company has given me now legal advice. I know I'm in good shape. But so that is a very strict act. And, you know, what you see here, when you strip away the cut, when you compare the rules and then look at the known facts so far, without the benefit that Comey had as FBI head of it's the Federal Bureau of Investigation, not the Federal Bureau of Matters. Right. So he was, Comey was heading that up. Before him, Mueller headed it up for 12 years, September 4, 2001 to September 4, 2013. So during this long, long period, the Clinton Foundation should have filed audits, real audits of their finances, truthful declarations to the federal government, to many states, U.S. states, to Washington, D.C., to certain cities, to many foreign governments. And these filings are not secret filings. They're not political strategy papers that you can hide. They're not legal memoranda that are protected by any kind of privilege. These are documents that every member of the public has an absolute valid right to see, and they must be truthful, and they must be corrected if they're untruthful. So there's this massive pile of paper that should have been filed properly that hasn't been filed properly. And, you know, we go back into history a little bit. When Bill and Hillary left the White House on the 20th, I believe it was, of January 1993, the public almost immediately found out about the Markbridge pardon, the pardon by Bill Clinton at the 11th hour, supposedly without Eric Holder's knowledge at the time, who was the point person, I believe, in justice at the moment on this issue back then, that he had pardoned a fugitive, Mark Rich, in a tax fraud case, a massive tax fraud case, a fugitive of this country who had not, in fact, shown up at trial, who hadn't served time in prison, who hadn't atoned for his sins or whatever. He pardoned that guy and his partner, Mr. I think Green, I believe his name was, last name. There was a huge hue and cry over this, a cry so big, and that, you know, it was a bipartisan. Jimmy Carter was upset with it. Many Democrats were, frankly and validly upset with it. So there was an immediate FBI investigation, and there were grand juries impaneled. And the people involved in this, who do you think they were? Ultimately, the head of the FBI was Robert Mueller at this time. And the person leading the investigation of the Clinton Foundation as the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York was James Comey. And this investigation, and we can go into the FBI vault file, which is a public document. You can go and you can see over 600 pages of evidence that clearly show anybody who can read and understand English that there was a very sweeping investigation of the Clinton Foundation between around February 2001 to sometime in 2005. Now, how could our FBI, which is supposedly the foremost investigative group of dedicated men and women who serve all of us, no matter what our party is, or lack of interest in politics, who protect the American public, or should be protecting the American public, how did these people, with all the tools and resources they have, the forensic tools and resources, all the financial resources, all the bright minds, all their knowledge of law, how could they have missed, between 2001 and 2005, these obvious frauds that are obvious for you to see? You cannot find in the public domain, though there must be in the public domain, legally compliant audits of the Clinton Foundation for any year. The short period, 97, all the way through 2004, there are no legally compliant audits in the public domain, even though the Clinton Foundation has admitted that they were solicited and they did raise funds in every state in America and in many foreign countries. Why did the FBI, under the leadership of Bob Mueller and the Justice Department, at first when he was U.S. Attorney and then later when he was the Deputy Attorney General, therefore the second in command of the Justice Department, why did Comey and Mueller miss this between 2001 and 2005? And thereafter, when Comey took a sidestep and he went into working first at Lockheed Martin, I believe, and then for a hedge fund. But Mueller was in the saddle as head of the FBI until September 4th, 2013. How could he have missed the fact that the Clinton Foundation was never validly authorized to fight HIV/AIDS internationally? How did he miss that? Right? How did he miss the fact that the portion of the Clinton Foundation that in theory was established at March 24th, 2004 to fight HIV/AIDS was never lawfully authorized by the IRS for that purpose and was falsely and invalidly, in quote, liquidated out of existence on December 31st, 2005. How did this bright man with all of his people miss that point? How did they miss the false and materially misleading attempted reorganizations of the Clinton Foundation beginning September 4th, 2009 forward when he was head of the FBI? How did he miss all this?
Well, assessed the Clinton Foundation as a criminal enterprise, and you kind of said that looking at the books, you saw at least $1 trillion trading hands using the Clinton Foundation as the middleman in all of this. But a lot of money was accumulated principally by the Clintons themselves. Are you satisfied that the Clinton Foundation actually engaged in a level of criminality that we've never seen in the world of philanthropy, and that we haven't gotten close to the question that you just raised? How did these things happen to a supposedly vigilant and vigorous Federal Bureau of what? Investigation. How did this happen? So,
well,
is there no mechanism within the apparatus of the philanthropic world and government, most specifically the IRS and related entities, including the FBI, because this would constitute crime. This is crime, big time crime. And there's no threat. I have not heard of any threat of even or whisper of an investigation. When she was questioned by Comey, this is Hillary, and her associates, they were protected even in at that stage in the room. They were given immunity. They were given a free pass. Nothing stuck. They didn't even administer a Miranda warning to say, well, you're here being questioned in connection with A, B, C, or D, and understand that these things that we are asking questions about are federal crimes. You are being advised that you are being investigated with the intention that if the transaction that we are engaging in today raises suspicion or demonstrates to our satisfaction that a crime has been committed here, please understand that you are now operating, and we are all now operating under your Miranda rights. That didn't happen.
Yeah, the fix certainly seemed to be in.
I would say.
Yes.
And go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. So we talked about this, I think, a little bit before. I mean, I think the way people experienced in litigation who are lawyers and experienced in criminal matters think about this is what they're looking for are, you know, a slam dunk case. And when it turns to civil penalties and to fines, they're looking for solvent defendants, people who have money, who will have money at the end of this game. And so that's why, you know, I frankly think the people of Arkansas should be ashamed that their attorney general and her staff, who I, you know, I personally contacted and spoke to their staff and laid this case out in August of 2015. There's no excuse for the attorney general, no good excuse for the attorney general of the state of Arkansas for not standing up. This is somebody whose office was involved going after the Texas and Tennessee cancer scam, which was only $200 million because every state was involved in that. The landscape is clear. The landscape is similar. Yes, the going after the Clinton Foundation will expose the state of Arkansas to scrutiny. And unwelcome news will come out of that, implicating possibly Republicans and Democrats in the state of Arkansas for charity fraud and other crimes. But, you know, that's, we're in the law and order business in this country. And, you know, I would have imagined that the attorney general could do her job and that this is a significant case. But no, they haven't done anything. I give, of course, here in New York, I mean, Eric Schneiderman is a hopeless political, you know, hack. Who has shown his true colors. And, you know, here's the case of, you know, these Clintons coming in from out of town. and making a mockery of our strict laws, providing a textbook case of how you should not run a charity from a secret office, no less, here in 77 Water Street. An undisclosed office was used. You know, secret servers, secret offices, unauthorized purposes. Who knows how much money? You get up into the trillion-dollar range, thinking not purely about the Clinton Foundation and its affiliate and just its affiliates, but about all the crooked contracts that may have been won by people around the world and all the value that may have been created by those crooked contracts, public offerings of companies that get created by telecommunications, cable, you know, cable TV bids or wireless licenses or mining contracts, or you name it. You could very quickly get up into that trillion-dollar range, but on the narrow amount of the disclosed value of the Clinton Foundation and its close affiliates, the Global Fund, Unitaid, and others, you're around $100 billion. That's serious money. And so when I and the people I'm working with on this took a look at this, we very quickly came to the conclusion that the political establishment, the uniparty in this country, may drag its feet and may strike, you know, the compromises saying, well, you know, Republicans will be implicated and Democrats will be implicated, but this is too embarrassing, you know, let's just sweep it under the rug. We saw the potential for that, and then we realized that there's a very powerful provision of the law that can be applied either by attorneys general, if they get around to it, or individuals in across our country have the right to approach governments and say, listen, there's a clear public interest in going after the Clintons and the people around the Clintons for this specific array of crimes. There's a potential for getting hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars back, not tens of billions, frankly, penalties and interest. Our states, the state of Illinois today is melting down. The state of Illinois does have charity laws. There is a very rich person, several rich people in Illinois who have given money to this illegal collection of criminal frauds. And in doing so, they have done it from foundations they control, and that's against the law, and they are potentially in violation of the law. And the good news for the people of this country is that these people have enough money to pay the fines and will have an interest in paying the fines. And there are many large foundations inside America and around the world that stand in great financial peril now because of what the Clintons have done. And these people, Bill and Melinda Gates are two prime examples, and others, wander around the world claiming that, oh, no, no, Bill, you know, what happened at Microsoft, you know, we may have engaged in questionable behavior, but no, we're philanthropists now. We're good people. Okay? Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, last I checked, has more than $40 billion in it. They can afford to pay these fines. And then we can go around the world and we can ask, you know, in Ireland, why did the good people of Ireland start giving money to the Clinton Foundation in and around or towards the Clinton Foundation in 2003 when no part of the Clinton Foundation was authorized to fight HIV/AIDS? There was no formal organization created at that time. Indisputable. Why did the good people of citizens of Ireland allow their politicians to raise their international profiles by announcing donations, purported donations, towards the presidential foundation? Why did their politicians enter into agreements? I have copies of them now that are fraudulently drafted, signed by Bill Clinton, signed by Iron Magaziner, who were not directors or officers of the Clinton Foundation at that time. Why did Bill go around and Ray and Ira raise money from these foreign governments in my state here of New York, where there are strict laws against doing that? Why did they hold themselves out as being agents of foreign governments, taking their money to fight HIV/AIDS and do other programs around the world without registering under our law as agents of foreign governments? And by the way, how does the sitting Secretary of State have a husband who's serving as an agent of a foreign government while she's Secretary of State? How do you accomplish that?
Explain that at that time, Hillary and Bill Clinton facilitated the sale of 20% of the United States uranium? Is that part of what a philanthropic organization can do?
I guess it's that would be the newfangled Arkansas, you know, state-of-the-art Clinton Foundation. But no, just strictly, it's, you know, this makes a mockery of the law. Now, there's some who believe in taking on the establishment that the way to bring it down is to make a mockery of the law, and to engage in just this type of behavior and, you know, so muddy the landscape that, you know, the powers that be determine, you know, we can't make this right. It's just hopeless. Let's move on. You know, but that's not, you know, I could see that in an investment fund. I could see that in a company. But in the not-for-profit world, you know, I don't see unbalance. I have made the bet that good people across the entire political spectrum will say, you know, we may not like some of his politics, and he may be a stubborn guy who can't stay off Utrecht Leeds radio station, but, you know, on the narrow cases of charity fraud, we can agree one area where Republicans, Democrats, conservatives, liberals, progressives can all agree you don't commit charity fraud. You don't raise from millions of people using the Internet, using telephones, using the mail. You don't divert money from a charity. You don't go around saying that you're going to fight HIV/AIDS when you have no real capability to do that. You don't have a team that's able to do that. You don't control the organization properly. You don't hire some crooked accounting firm or some crooks at an accounting firm to manufacture statements that purport to comply with the regulations and laws but don't actually do so, figuring that nobody's ever really going to check it. You don't do that. And when you go back, you know, to the beginning or the beginning of this foundation, why, forgetting the tawdry details, why was Bill Clinton impeached? He wasn't convicted, but he was technically impeached. He was impeached for lying under oath and obstructing justice. Those are the twin pillars of the strategy, it seems, that drives the Clinton charities. You lie under oath in all your filings, and then you use your influence at the IRS and Department of Justice and around the world to stop the wheels of justice from going against you. That's what they do. That's what they're doing here with this charity. And, you know, I think now, you know, it's tough to argue that it's in the interest of promoting the Clinton brand right now. And Donald Trump has been asking, you know, for areas of potential bipartisan agreement. It would seem to me that this could be one where we could agree. You know, let's clean up charity land, not simply the Clinton Foundation, also the McCain Institute. You know, doesn't matter the politics. Let's make sure that all charities are operated for their authorized purposes exclusively as the law requires. They're not,
yeah,
you know,
it would mean that he would have to investigate himself and his son's foundations. Donald Trump is not too clean in the foundation department.
Well, I agree. Fair game. You know,
I said
you operate a foundation.
Donald Trump is not too clean in the foundation department, violating the laws.
What I'm saying to you, Teresa, I haven't studied. I study primarily big foundations, you know, and big companies. And Donald Trump's charities are not that big. And I take the point that on his the one that was Trump University, he did pay a fine recently or last year for failing to comply with with strict New York laws that govern how you operate anything with the word university in it. And I would point out there that there is something called the Clinton Global Initiative University, which has been breaking those very same laws, which the IRS has not, neither the Attorney General of the state of New York nor the IRS has gone after the Clinton Foundation that I know of yet for breaking those rules. But on the other point you mentioned, Eric Trump's charity and the questions arising with that, those should be investigated as well. You know, you don't get a break from prosecution because you're a family member of the President of the United States. If you've made mistakes, you know, they should be investigated, and then the appropriate authorities should determine whether they need to be prosecuted, and if they are prosecuted, they should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. Doesn't matter your party affiliation.
So what does it look like in a situation, I'm just talking strategically now, your nemesis has been and still continues to be Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton. You're newly elected, and you need to make points. Why not pursue the Clintons at this level to make a lot of good points? Are you just afraid that, well, you will unsettle the people who still are faithful to the Clintons and to the Democratic Party, and you don't need to necessarily disturb that beehive? Move on to other things, and you'll eventually will get to that if it looks that you can get a lot out of a move like that. And you have 1.5 seconds to answer the question.
I think, you know, I hope that the investigations that were opened prior to the election results continue and expand. I hope they have the required resources. I hope they travel all around the world. And frankly, I hope that the President of the United States is not involving himself personally in such a matter. I mean, let the Department of Justice, let the FBI actually do investigation and grand jury seating and prosecution and expose the full extent of this, not simply at the Clinton Foundation and, you know, also the McCain Institute, other places. I think, you know, it's been a long time, decades actually, many decades, since charity laws were reformed. And I think that the regulatory apparatus for charities is so far behind. It's in the buggy whip era, and spaceships are being operated here that need to be regulated, and they're not. So it's high time that Congress needs to do work, the FBI needs to do its work, and the Department of Justice really needs to get in gear here.
Well, thanks, Charles, for being with us and providing us such an in-depth view with so many facets to it, which tells us that we can't trust anybody. We have to take whatever they say with as large a grain of salt as we could find. It's always a pleasure to have you with us. And I know your work on this question of the Hillary and Bill Foundation, the questions that remain unanswered, with your help and leadership and investigation, will at least train the light of scrutiny and bring us all to an understanding that in so many ways we have been cooperating with illegalities and we've been supporting it. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Teresa. I'll continue to trust but verify.
Trust but verify. Incredible warning. This brings us to the end of the program. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. A great program always. So you want to stay tuned for that. You can reach me via email at leadstories@gmail.com. And you can also visit Charles at charlesortel.com as a way of getting more information on the topics we have been discussing. A pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your company. We see each other tomorrow for more talk. Bye-bye.